So the talk tonight and the reflections are about thought, and the title of the talk would be to purify our thoughts and to purify ourselves from thought. We say letaher et ha-machshavot veletaher et atzmam atzmeinu mi-ha-machshavot. So obviously, thought is hugely powerful. We allow thought to control us totally because we're identified with thought. So, for example, we go to war, we can fight wars and we can kill other people because of a thought that says they're going to harm us or they're wrong and we're right, or they, whatever, them and us, and this kind of thing. And we can actually, if we're not looking carefully, we can actually think that we're only alive through our thinking. Like Descartes said, you know, I think, therefore I am. So he needed thought to confirm that he exists. And wasn't sure that existence happens without thought. So it's really, really powerful. We gave huge power to thought. And it's a power, we gave power to thought to make us miserable or make us happy. And the famous quote in the Dhammapada that says, you know, happiness will from a pure mind follows like a cart follows a horse. From an impure mind, misery follows like a cart following a horse. So it's really, it really can be the total stories that we live by arise in our minds. And in certain way, this is indeed the realm of psychology. And if you remember that generally this course is about looking at things in a more psychological way and looking at things in a more awakening way. So and both of those are in Buddhism and Dharma. It's not that psychology is only Western and awakening is only Dharma. There is a huge, huge resource in the Dharma, and we're going to talk about that this evening as well, of, should we say, wise way of using the mind, would say Buddhist psychology. So in the psychology dimension, then thought is a story, is the stories that we tell and that we need. Thought are forms that pass through the mind. Thought shows us reality, which we believe in, the world as it is, what world, what exists, who we are. And thought also will help to point us to the formless. Because if we, at the same moment that thought has a huge power, it's also empty. And that's the real strange paradox about a thought. It is huge, huge powerful. A thought will tell us, like I say, you've got to kill a whole, make a war on a whole people. But when you look at a thought, you see it really doesn't have any existence at all. It's and a scientist looking at thought will show it's just eoning, passing in the nervous system. It's made of nothing. It's just energy passing through the system. So, you know, this is the paradox. And the way to look at it in a way is water and the ocean. That thought would be a form based on the material, namely water, of an ocean. Ocean formless. And so thought is a form in consciousness, and the Choma Gelen, the actual materials the thought made of, is empty, is flowing, is something else. Flowing knowing. So clearly, when we look at thought in slightly more terms of psychology, or Buddhist or Western psychology, we of course get a bit of a shock. On the one hand, how it can be so wise and take us so deep and give us so much depth and understanding. The thought can, you know, contemplate philosophy and contemplate the stars and the universe and think about the origin of everything, and can we have a huge power in the thought. And also it's completely stupid. And if we look at our thought, most of it is the stuff that you saw on the internet. Is angry, kaze, haka'a, vomit of stupidities and chattering and I want a cup of coffee. Oh, I don't like this. Oh, I need this. Oh, I want that. Oh, where did that come from? Oh, you know, it's just like nonsense and chaos. And one or two classic images in the Buddhist teaching, of course, one is the monkey. And the reason is that the monkey is jumping from a branch to branch. So like thoughts, they do jump from branch to branch, but they don't seem to be going anywhere. They don't seem to be going anywhere sensible very, very often. But they do come in chains. So like the monkey catches one branch and then he goes from there to the next branch, they somehow are connected to each other, the thoughts. They come in chains. But they jump, kofsim, kolazman, kofes, kofes, kofes. And we know this from our meditation, how the monkey in us is constantly jumping and jumping from thing to thing and doesn't settle down, doesn't be quiet. And so that's an image from the Buddhist tradition. And also another one is the elephant, the wild elephant, Pilbara. And I think this one is a little bit more true, because the picture of the wild elephant is one of doing tremendous damage. You can imagine a wild elephant that is trampling through traditional Indian village life of the time of the Buddha, how it would destroy gardens and crops and
elephant in the mall.
Elephant in the mall, yeah. Oh, I wish. We need a whole herd of them. Just making total mess. So there's a lot of paradox around this. We build apparently a world that makes sense to us, a real world, but if we look at what builds this world, it's utter chaos. And monkeys in the mind. And yet somehow or other we sort of collect from all those monkeys something that seems to make sense, called this world. What I am, what the world is, my expectations, my understanding, my philosophy, the books we read, 10,000 books we read, all seem to make sense. But yet when we look at the mind that's doing that, it's just crazy monkey jumping around. So there's a clear paradox in all of this that we should pay attention to. So those of you who've been on the previous course on Paticca-samuppada, we studied this a bit, but I want to make a little, very briefly, some sort of clarity around the sort of classic Buddhist psychology about this. In Buddhist psychology, a thought is, and like a memory, is actually a sense, is like khush. It's like a sound that arrives to the ears. A thought, a memory, a picture, a story arrives to the mind. So it's we can imagine a thought like I could say, you know, I want a cup of tea, it will just arrive through loads of conditions and conditioning that give rise to it. But it's a sense. Most of the power of thought, if you remember, thought is fundamentally empty. It's just consciousness, like eonym in the mind. What forms a thought into a story is sankharas. Sankharas or formations or tendencies or patterns. Patterns, which is karma, include the way we build the world. So the way we build the world is already built when a thought arises. The thought is carrying a pattern already. So when I think a thought, I want a cup of tea, that thought seems to be in the present moment, but it's not free. It's already conditioned by history. Because I have to know what is tea, I have to know that I've had tea before, I have to know it's good for me, I have to be an Englishman that likes tea, I have to have, patterns in there. And so sankhara in the paticca-samuppada, the wheel of life, the conditioned, hita-vut-mutne, the conditioned arising, ignorance is first. In a way, there's no first and there's no, it's a circle. But should we say ignorance allows patterns to develop which we then believe in. And these patterns called me and the world. And from me and the world, we build a stream of consciousness. And so consciousness comes after sankhara. Sankhara is the patterning. Even how we define consciousness is already a pattern. A Buddhist will define it differently from an Englishman, or will experience it differently. A child will experience it differently from someone. It's already a pattern. Consciousness is already a sort of an awareness that's conditioned by sankhara. And then consciousness, or the stream of consciousness, gives the opportunity, the forms to its content. And then from there, the content is confirmed by attachment. So, I like tea, so that builds more tea-liking behavior, which is going around in the circle again and again. So, I like tea, I drink it, it's good for me, and I want it, and then I want it again next time, so the whole circle keeps going around and around. And so it's a little different from the Buddhist psychology here is a little bit different from, I don't know how much it's like science, actually. It's a very complex story, but should we say it's quite important or useful to see a thought not so much as the origin of everything, but as a product of an already conditioned process that is built into the system. It is like psychology, of course, Western psychology. But it's kind of it's a little bit explains how thought for us is so chaotic, it's because we're repeating all the conditioning that's accumulated all through all that ignorance, all that conditioning, kolahatnaya, all those messages that we took inside and we believed, all that thousands of lifetimes of karma that says human beings see the world like this, the structure of the brain is like that, the way, you know, all of that is lifetimes and lifetimes of learning, creating sankharas, formations, creating a kind of map of the world, and the thoughts arise in that map, through that map. They already come with a label. But a thought itself is like a sense, in itself, like a memory. When we look at it as it arises, it's like a sound coming from outside. But it's heavily shaped, the thought, and that's the issue for us, is shaped by ignorance. It's already shaped, the thought. Awareness, like I say, is just ayoni. It's empty. Consciousness is like water. It's totally empty. It's just a quality of, or an ability, a power of connecting, of knowing. That's all it is. It doesn't do anything. It's just, it's like air. It fits itself into the patterns that are ready for it, like water. So if there's a channel called tea liking, then the consciousness fits itself into that channel, and we have images of tea popping up in our consciousness. And if we have negative images that come up, they are going to be uncomfortable for us, but they're going to keep coming up, like your image the last time you talked about prejudice and colour of skin. And it's not you. It's karma that's created from thousands of lifetimes that has sort of created tendencies through ignorance, meaning through believing them, and then the thought just goes there. But it's like water, though. Thought is made of water. It's made of nothing. It's empty totally. And it just takes the form of sankharas, whatever that form is ready for it, whatever conditioning has happened, it just takes that form. So, because they're a product, a thought is a product of all of these chains of conditioning, that's why it's quite hard to deal with it. Because if we were totally free to see a thought as water, as nothing, as klum, easily, we wouldn't need to meditate that much, we would be fine, it would be just easy. But it's not, because there's been so much conditioning and sankharas built there all our life. And as I say, it's not only our life, it's the life of samsara. Has been constructed constructions which are the vessels that hold, that shape the free water of empty consciousness. The vessels get very strong, which is why Sankara, picture of Sankara is of the potter, the keramikai, and the pot. That's Sankara. It's a pot that holds, it's solid, heavy pot. And it holds things. It's a shaping. The shaping seems very strong. Because it's built strongly from all the years of our life, every minute we are being supported. I mean, just something very, very simple. Just a thought like our own name. It's a thought. Anyone will call Stephen and immediately something in me will jump and say yes. It's so fast, it's so total. How many millions of times has that been confirmed in my life by I'm supported that thought that I am Stephen? Millions of times it's happening every day, so much. And it just think how much solidity then that is created, that simple thought of a name, or name of anything. It's just a small example, but you can see, get a feeling of the power of the forming, of the shaping, of the potter, of the sankharas. And that's why we have to have compassion, because it really isn't that easy to dissolve the thoughts. They're wild elephants. They can do a lot of damage, and they're very heavy and powerful. So, meditation is needed here and is helpful as a way of quietening down and becoming less automatic around the forms of thought. And this quietening down, first of all, allows us space so that the mind can see its own content, that the mind can see the forms, the shaping that's going on. And that's quite difficult to do in ordinary life. We can do it, but it usually needs something, some insight, some meditation, some needs a bit of effort for the mind to be able to see the shaping going on of thought, the way the wild elephant acts and behaves and what he does, and quietening him down. But sometimes, as in the weekend, Asi, you pointed out to us, the meditation can also show us, Dafka, how wild this elephant is, which we didn't even notice before, because of various reasons. It can also do the opposite. It can tell us it's not quietening it down, but it's showing us how wild it is and how crazy it is. And so both of those are fine. It's a good insight to know how uncontrollable are our thoughts. It's a good insight, but it's painful. And we feel out of control, and we feel controlled by our thought. But that's an important step on the way to freedom. So whether we quieten thoughts or we get totally shocked by how unquiet we are, it actually doesn't matter so much. Both of them are helpful in the direction of clarity around this wild elephant. So what I want to talk about now is really about really an important concept in the Buddhist teaching, which is the concept of wholesome and unwholesome. And this is really about, yes, we have a wild elephant, and he is powerful, and so the first thing I'm going to do is get him to help me instead of hurt me, and get him to help others instead of hurting others, so that I'm going to allow the elephant to be the elephant, not pretend that I can turn him into a little mouse. He's wild, he's strong, he's got all that conditioning behind him, but part of the practice is that he begins to serve me and not control and create damage. And so here is a concept which is, you know, very rooted really deeply in the Dharma, which is the concept of kusala and akusala. And kusala, the traditional English translation, is wholesome. Wholesome, you could also say, is healthy, is harmonious, and is beneficial. Other words for wholesome. Wholesome is a little bit old-fashioned English. A lot of the translations of the Pali were done some time ago, so they use a bit old-fashioned English words. But wholesome, use it in English, use it quite a lot around food that is healthy, natural food that really is nutritious, that's wholesome. So wholesome is, and what is wholesome? Kusala is wholesome. And what is wholesome? It is connected to liberation. So anything connected to liberation is wholesome, is healthy for us, is positive, beneficial for us and for others. And akusala, not wholesome, is not connected to liberation, is thoughts that are basically supporting the whole chain of ignorance and conditioning and samsara, namely thoughts that add to greed, hate, and delusion. So non-wholesome is that thoughts that support greed, hate, and delusion, the three poisons. So I don't want to go into three poisons right now, but it's anything that increases our desire, our neediness, our wanting, our insecurity, our fears, our angers, our hate, our conflict, and all of those is greed, and hate or aversion or negativity. Slida is an aversion. Again, old English word. It means slida. It means against. It means negativity. such as thoughts like shame or against I'm no good is also a classic thought of negative against ourselves. And delusion is delusion is anything that is taking the what is true and turning it to the untrue or the unreal or the illusory or being in illusion and ignorance and confusion. So kusala and ankusala and akusala. So there is, especially in the monasteries, they do a lot of work on this. And I suppose it's monastic life today does encourage this sense of holiness or purity. And so in many, many monasteries, traditional Buddhist practice is around kusala and akusala. And this is really about purifying the mind. It's about purifying the thought. I would say, making music in the mind instead of cacophonia. Instead of chaos and cacophonia. Turning what the mind says slowly, slowly into music. And it's about looking really at the mind and doing something with it. And so purifying the mind here is partly active. And it's something a little bit different from what many of us are used to in Vipassana. And the Vipassana would say just allow things to be what they are. See them for what they are. But the truth is, that's already working with them. That if we look at what we do, actually, when we sit and meditate, there is quite a lot of active work in, even though we don't necessarily describe it and define it like that. So, for example, contemplation of papancha, seeing the way our thought runs away with us, with one thing leading to another, leading to another, leading to another, and seeing how painful that is, that's working with material in the mind. It's working with thought. And therefore it's quite active that we work with it and we see we don't need it. And we let it go. So we don't need all the chains of thinking. They don't go anywhere, they don't help us, they can lead us to a lot of difficulty and pain. Loops in the mind, when we see them. All the loops that we have, we see them and they give us pain. And our engagement with them is active. And here we have to be a bit careful. Because if we're engaged with the mind, we have to be careful that we are actually helping ourselves and not hurting ourselves. Well, I saw just now there was a study appeared, a very, very big study, with hundreds of thousands of people, discovered that self-reflection and introspection is one of the main sources of mental predictors, shall we say, of mental illness. That are common health problems in the UK. And why? Well, it says a bit of self-reflection can be a good thing, but when introspection goes wrong and thoughts get stuck on repeat, playing over and over in the mind, then it becomes especially self-blame. And is a predictor of depression and anxiety, when round and round in the mind. So we have to be a little careful that we're not actually adding to anxiety and depression by looking at thought. And so we have to be careful we're not adding to papancha. We're reducing papancha. So the Buddha had some very nice descriptions of ways to work with thought and purify thought. And it's in a sutta that I will send you called Working with Thought, with Taints, with Stains, Tamim. Okay? And I'll send it to you. And he basically said five ways to do this. And now you'll recognize that we actually already do this in Vipassana. I'll describe the five ways, and it will show you that that's actually what we're already doing in a way in Vipassana. First way, and perhaps the easiest, is to replace negative thoughts by kusala. To replace negative thoughts, that hurt us, and have in them greed, hate, and delusion, by more wholesome thoughts. And so this would be, for example, if we feel stress or difficulty, we give ourselves love and acceptance. So metta and compassion would be changing the mental climate, the weather, the mental climate from akusala to kusala. We have something going around the mind that we can't deal with, like a fear. We just take ourselves kindly. We just be kind to ourselves and say, yeah, okay. All right. There's a fear going around the mind. Anxiety going around the mind. Worry. Blame. Guilt. Judgment. Anger. Whatever. But I'll replace the... I'll give myself some love, some metta, some kindness and compassion. That's already changing the atmosphere. The elephant does less harm. A sense of understanding of harm and non-harm, non-violence to ourselves and to others. It's already changing the atmosphere. Renunciation or letting go is already changing the atmosphere. It's an active thing, like I was saying to you, Yoni. It's happening. We do it. Even if it's subtle, you say, no, let go. Not worth it. Lokidai. Go here. And so, changing the internal energy, if you like. So then the second method he talked about is reflection on results. And this is where it can get a bit sticky if we get stuck on this study called rumination or chewing our stuff. So reflection on results is really understanding, look, this isn't helping me. This chain of thinking is going nowhere. Just doesn't help. So this is such a boring talk. at least I'm excited.
By thinking it's boring.
Yeah. But it's reflection on result. What happens if these thoughts keep going? Where is it taking me? Very famous sutta of Buddha talking to his son about this. Reflecting, if you go there, what will happen? If you keep going there, what will happen to you? So it's a little bit like nu, you know, it is a bit like that. But, well, okay, so the Buddha can do that sometimes. I think we can all have identify with that. You know, how many of us, maybe every one of us, will have thoughts about money, for example, Oh, I need some more money. Oh, it's so difficult for me. I don't have enough money. I wish I could have a bit more. I wish I could have a better car or a better house or a better thing. And then have that thought, the understanding, that doesn't really get me anywhere. That line of thinking doesn't help me that much. Doesn't even help me to get money. It just doesn't help that much. It just doesn't bear fruit. It's not, the chains in that direction don't give good fruit. So that's already looking at the result, changing akusala after kusala, saying, it doesn't help me. It's like a diet, a bad diet. I know that if I keep eating burekas, you know, I'm gonna, it's just not gonna help me. I'm gonna suffer from it eventually. So it just knowing, if I have the diet, this diet of this kind of thoughts, they're gonna screw up my mental digestive system. and the opposite. The benefit of kusala, of wholesomeness, we feel something. If I keep thinking wholesome thoughts, wholesome thoughts around liberation, around freedom, around purity, they make my life, they make something sweeter in my life. Just see it. They benefit. So you can feel the benefit. I'm just a kinder person to myself and to others. I can see how if I, results of self criticism, for example, as a chain, not very good, but when I drop it, I feel I can accept myself more, and that my life turns out to be better. So it's kind of looking at results is another way. Another way, there's five of them in the sutta. The third way is, very much we do it in Vipassana, is if something hurts, we can look at something that doesn't hurt. If the back hurts, we can meditate on the hands. And we do that. And the hands don't hurt. So we can acknowledge the back. We can say, yes, it does hurt. But I have hands that don't. We can be active about, we can see the healthy in us. It reminds me of this very much. Actually, the monks do it, and also the. It reminds me of my British school, where they used to say for the British sport was very holy, kadosh, and we really, really had to do sport, and they kept saying it's so that it's instead of violence. Instead of sexuality, instead of going to pieces, reduces sexual desire, craziness in this age of school age, and sport is a good alternative to everything. And they used to justify it. They say, well, you know, if it wasn't for sport, countries would be fighting each other with the guns. So instead of that, they have kadurego. So they made it very holy. At least in my childhood, the sport, it was a very big thing. But it just is sort of the monks do pretty well the same thing. If you got, you know, you look at sort of, talk to monks about the sexual issues in monasteries, whether it's Christian monasteries or Buddhist monasteries or Zen monasteries, they do a lot around, for example, hard work and so on, in order to sort of stop the mind always going to sexuality. So it's kind of redirecting, going somewhere else, and stepping out of the negative chain by going somewhere more healthy in the mind. And another way, which we also already do in Vipassana, is we look at the origin of thought. Of something that's not very helpful to us, we can actually see where it comes from. It might come from an emotion. And it's very much classic Vipassana. I mean, thousands of times I've said to people who have repeated thoughts that are going round and round that they can't control, well, what's driving? Maybe there's an emotion like fear or blame or anger that's driving the chain of thinking. So there's an emotion, which is the engine. And having a look at that and recognizing the sources of unskillful thoughts and acknowledging it. Oh, okay. So I see where it's coming from. And even just acknowledging space, thoughts coming from emptiness, is already giving them less power. And the final of the final one is just fighting them. Which is, you think, well, that's not the Buddhist way. And it sometimes is. And sometimes the Buddha said, yeah, you just got to sit down and be determined, you know. Nechishut. Just don't let it be there. Just get rid of it. I think in the sutta, the expression used is grit your teeth. Clench your teeth. Say, won't go there. So use willpower. Taratson. So here's some ways of purifying thought, which are more the Buddhist, the psychology side of the Dharma. And the awakening side with thought is a bit different. It isn't dealing with the story of thought at all. Which is in the world of psychology. It's not dealing with the wave to make it a better wave. It's seeing that the wave is made of ocean or made of water. And so we see thought as thought. And this already not only takes away its power, but gives us a clarity and an insight and a sense of inner freedom. Ah, it's thought. It's just thought passing by. It's just story, just conditioning, just sankhara. It's just like a sound. And hafrashot of the mind. It's just a secretion of mind. Doesn't do anything. It's nothing. So seeing thought as thought also helps us on the psychology. It helps us not to take it too seriously, to believe it. It helps us to stop the papancha, which is the chain of monkey, every thought bringing another one. And it gives us an understanding that they have power, how they control us, but then when we really see them as they are, then they don't control us anymore. Because we just see a thought is just a thought. So it doesn't need to control us. All it is a thought. And so that reduces its power to control. Control comes because we gave it power. We said, the thought is me. And we believe it. Like a thought like, I am no good. I blame myself for being stupid. That's a thought that creates damage. And if we see it as just a thought, then we don't give it power anymore. Doesn't have any power to, it's just a thought. Doesn't do anything. So, really seeing a thought as a thought, seeing their source, seeing how the thought arises from an empty space and goes back again, and seeing the nature of what is a thought, how it carries a story, how it can carry a story differently all the time. And also very powerful is to see primary thoughts. A primary thought is like a thought like, I exist. It's like very powerful first thoughts. I exist, I am, is a first thought, as Ramana Maharshi says all the time. If we see that as thought, a form in the mind, I am, it's a very powerful practice. And even paradoxically not identifying with the thought I am. That needs a moment of contemplation. Non-identification with the thought I am. Means not believing it, seeing it's just a thought. It's just a arising of a thought I am. But it's because it's very deep thought, it feels like it's total, but we can still not identify with it. Just notice it. Sense of arising of I am. And disappearing. Arising and vanishing. So, it leads us, if we keep going with looking thought at thought, it leads us to some very interesting places. It leads us to thinking, to seeing thought as just energy, or light, or pure awareness. Well, that really is a subject for next week. So I'm going to be talking, or next meeting, I forget, not maybe next week, I'm going to be talking about that, the space in the mind that thought invites us to notice. But if we follow thought as story and see it as just thought, in not as story, we're seeing the water that makes up the wave. We're seeing what the wave is made of. It's made of a quality of knowing, a quality of awareness. And this awareness is wrapped in clothes, which is sankhara, which is story. But we can actually see that when we look at story and we see it's made up of just an energy of knowing. It's made up of this material called awareness. And it leads us to discover emptiness. Where there was story, we just see it goes. But if we are story, so we go. And if we are a thought, I exist as a thought, so when that goes, then there's anatta, emptiness, non-self. I wrote a poem about this, which I'm going to read, which I'll also send you. It's called Foam on the Waves. How can a story float up from nothing? Or are stories always born from other stories? Thoughts, orphan children, foam on the waves, bubbles of busyness. But beware, you stand before an angel or a diaphanous demon. Diaphanous is like a mirage, like a mist. Oh. Making us healers or killers. Thoughts are radiant ions, weaving illusion out of pure light, arising from nothing, returning to nothing, and in between, signifying the world. So raid the unknown, love the womb, not just the baby, and let the power of nothing reveal everything. Keith, when he was here, and he's coming back in April, he left something on thought, which I just want to read a small piece. Do not listen to thoughts, or attend to whatever arises in the mind, but instead examine where the thought or the image comes from, where it stays and where it goes. If we do this for long enough, we will discover that all thought forms are empty, and that there is nothing substantial in the mind. Keep the mind in its own place, unmodified, without distraction, and at ease in its state of clear, naked emptiness. Do not attempt to stop the mind, and do not follow it. In this way we are freed of all the suffering of emotional pain, and we go in peace. The happiness produced is a deep calm, and we call it serenity. So, it leads to not only a discovery of the nature of mind. If we look at thought and disintegrate or behind the story of the thought, we look at the thought. And it leads also to another way of living, of being. Because we become different through that. It's not just a kind of trick of meditation skill that we enjoy, but actually it makes our life in a way radically different. It leads to an awakened life where we don't believe the stories in our own mind. We know that they are just energy arising in the mind based on forms that are conditioned forms that come through conditioning, atnaya, and conditions. We don't believe anymore. And this is a way of living spontaneously and freely. And so it's quite powerful insight to see a thought as empty awareness. Changes our life. Thank you.